welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, trying not to get hit in the face by microphones. Thank you. www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. The Matthew Aaron Show is on Facebook. You can like us there. And, of course, I'm always willing to listen to your negative comments or positive comments on iTunes. I actually request that you please go to iTunes and make as many positive or negative comments as you'd like, because, I don't know, I think that's just a good way for you to keep in touch with me other than emailing me or bothering me.
We love you, Matt.
Thanks. by the way, I'm joined by Alex Luisi.
How's it going, guys?
Yeah, nice. You know, I was watching last night the show called Newsroom.
Horrible.
Oh, really?
I thought the second one was horrible. The first one was amazing. The first episode was fantastic.
Well, I'm going to call my friend Julia Gray, who, of course, has been on the show many times as a co-host. She has a lot of newsroom experience. And her and I are going to just gossip a little bit on what she thought of the program. Waiting for my girlfriend Julia to pick up.
Julia. Hi, you've reached 773-289-7260. Please write phone. Please leave a message and I will call you back. Thank you. Bye.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
All right. Here's the problem with Blog Talk. Oh, hi, Julia. How you doing? This is Matthew from the Matthew Aaron Show. You may know me. I was supposed to be calling you at this time. You did not pick up. That's no big deal. Whatever. The big deal is Blog Talk Radio and their esteemed technology would not let me hang up on you while we were giving out your number. So I apologize for that. Hopefully no strangers call you in the middle of the night or, you know, one day I'd like to start out a show where it goes well, where it goes, oh, I'm going to hang up on Julia, by the way. Now I can hang up on her. Thanks, Blog Talk. I don't want to go off on a Blog Talk rant. It's just, there's no point.
That was a Chicago dump, right?
773? All right, calm down with the why don't you give out the rest of it?
555.
Now, if I call her again.
She probably sees talk radio on the call right there.
Oh, yeah, like Billy West?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll pick up. Bowish.
All right, I'm going to call her again. Let's see if they actually give me a chance. No, it's not looking that way. They don't give me a.
Hello.
Hi, Julia.
Yes, sir.
Are you there?
Yeah, I am. Are you there?
Yeah, are you there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello, nurse. Hello.
I got to tell you, this is the most annoying thing on the planet to me.
What's that?
Okay, hear me now.
I can hear you. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, well, talk radio is not my biggest fan, I guess.
Right.
We know that. So I wanted to talk to you about the newsroom.
Okay.
So you and I are both.
Wait, who am I talking to besides you? Who else is there? Hello. Who else is there besides you, Matt?
Yep.
Is that Lee?
No, it's not Lee.
God.
Oh, this
uh-oh,
is.
Uh-oh, shit. Uh-oh. I'm sorry.
One. We got to crank the volume in our miracle ear. All right.
Okay.
So I was talking to you last night about the newsroom furiously.
Right.
And it got renewed today. It got
Isn't it really? You know, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm not.
No, I'm not.
HBO, they like Aaron Sorkin, and they've been Sorkinized.
Yeah.
So that's why. Yeah.
I'm not surprised, especially because you and I just talked about it. So why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Like the day after we were complaining.
You know, I don't know. So I don't know. The show, I think, you know, like all of his shows, I think he's a very smart man and he's a good writer. But it I don't know. I think it's tough to write for television these days. I don't know, because you either have really smart, fun stuff, interesting stuff, or just crap. And I think he's not crap, but I think it's like it's almost trying too hard. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it makes sense. You were saying you couldn't put your finger on what your problem with it is. I put my finger on it. There's no drama on this show.
Right.
Nothing where I'm sitting there going, I mean, with Game of Thrones, you've got a million storylines going on. You know,
yeah.
You never know who's going to die. You never know who's in deep shit. With
right.
Boardwalk Empire, same thing. With all these great – Good Wife. Okay, Good Wife, which this show is kind of like. But the Good Wife, every week you're wondering, okay, what's going to happen to Alan Cumming's character? He's got this storyline.
Right.
Him and Peter's campaign could get fucked. So there's all these things going on. This show, there is nothing going on. It's like Seinfeld. Uh-huh. It's like Seinfeld, except not funny.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I think one of the problems is there's too many characters.
Way too many characters.
I don't know.
Well,
I think there's way too many characters. And I'm, you know, like I think we were saying last night. I was trying to figure out who the Jeff. Daniel's character is based on it is Olbermann, isn't it? Isn't it Keith Olbermann? Isn't that kind of what he's doing? He's doing like a Keith Olbermann type.
I'm like 90% sure it's supposed to be Keith Olbermann-esque, and also like yeah, too many characters. Like I told you last night, I guarantee you Olivia Munn will not be around the second season. They have
And you nailed it when you said that she's like Moira Kelly. Because she is. She's about as, I mean, I think Moira is probably a lovely person, but everything I've ever seen her in, it's like, okay, here's my cure for insomnia. I'm going to sleep now just by watching her. And yeah, Olivia Munn is just kind of there. She's like wallpaper paste. I don't know. That's not very nice, but you get the idea.
It's not very nice, but it's not very... The other problem I have with it is he has this obsession with hiring the same woman for every show under a different name, whether it's Allison Pill or whether it's Sarah Paulson or whether it's Janelle Maloney, who's good. She's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Like when I remember when West Wing first came out, and I hated it. I was like, nobody talks like this, first of all. Nobody does. I don't care how smart you are or where you are. And then after a while, it started to grow on me. I don't know why, it just did. So they had really different characters. And that's why, I eventually grew to like the West Wing a lot. But there's something... I don't know how to put it, but there's just something. Maybe it's too soon for the show for me to really make a judgment. I've watched each of the episodes a few times just to see if there's something I was missing. I'm like, no, I don't know what it is. Something is not right for me. I don't know if it's because the dialogue is too quick or the lines are too long or what. Every line is a speech, which just drives me crazy. I don't know. It's something I know it sounds really strange, but it's just, I don't know. Do you agree or no?
No, I feel the same way as you where, and once again, this goes back to there's nothing going on. So all there's going on is bickering and fighting. And then, like you said, they had that one line last night that was so hokey. The one where he's like, I'm your senior executive producer, and if you screw up like this again, I'm going to be mad. And I'm
yeah.
God, and then acting, the whole bar scene was bad. It was like it went from Aaron Sorkin to David E. Kelly, like real fast.
Yeah, I agree. It was
Allison Pill at the bar was horrendous. Like, don't send that in for consideration.
Right. Wait, how many episodes is this first season? Do you know?
I think it's 10.
10? Okay.
We got 8 more to go, and I'm hoping it heats up. But I got to tell you, the West Wing pilot was killer.
The what? I'm sorry. The what?
The West Wing pilot was great. The Studio 60 was good, even though it wasn't a great show. And Sports Night's pilot was good. And this is really slow. This is plays like the greatest hits of Aaron Sorkin, minus the substance.
It's like he's almost like he's phoning it in. I'm sure that HBO is paying him a ton of money. And, you know, I like that the HBO is taking chances with a lot of different shows. I mean, Treme is a great show. And, you know, some of their old stuff was great, too, that they had on, you know, Game of Thrones and Deadwood, which was classic, and The Wire and all that stuff. That was great. But I don't know. I don't know if they're almost trying too hard to maintain that level of sophistication that we're so used to from them, from that network. I don't know. It's just the jury's still out. My jury is still out on this one, if that helps. So.
Calling you is, I was also, because you have a lot of experience in newsrooms.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could, like, share with us if any of this holds true to you.
Well, you were talking about how everybody is wearing sweaters and coats. Most of the newsrooms I've been in have been pretty cold, no matter what time of year, because of all the equipment. Just like being in a film editing room, you know, it has to be cold because the equipment otherwise will burn out. So there's, you know, they have the lights on all the time. That the heat from the Klieg lights tends to bleed over into the rest of the newsrooms because it's very hot. So, you know, they are chaotic like that. I mean, that's the one thing that I like seeing is that this newsroom is pretty, to me, from what I've been in, compared to what I've been in, just, you know, both online, print, and then also an actual, you know, TV newsroom, it's pretty authentic. So it's, you know, it was nice to see that the production designer, who actually is from my hometown of Wayne, Illinois, which I find interesting, did a pretty good job of maintaining that, you know, maintaining, you know, staying true to the whole, you know, what an actual newsroom looks like. And he got the feel down pretty well because it's, you know, a lot of tight shots. It's pretty intense, especially on Deadline if there's a story happening. It can get pretty crazy. So, and people are running around like maniacs and screaming at each other and throwing shit. So, you know, not actual shit, but maybe they do in some, but you know what I mean. So, That was kind of nice to see, but yeah, just to answer your question, why are they all wearing sweaters? It's like, well, they're cold.
Well, I can tell you that for me, there's two other things I wanted to touch upon. First, the Sam Waterston character, does he have like Alzheimer's on the show already? Like, he just comes off as really and like not knowledgeable.
Johnny Crane.
Denny Crane.
Who is he based on? Do you know?
Well, I'm sure Jane Fonda is supposed to be based on Ted Turner, who we haven't met yet. So I'm guessing he's supposed to be based on somebody, but I couldn't tell you who. I don't know. You know what else I was going to ask you? Why does Aaron Sorkin not write anything ever for gays? He always writes in, like, random black characters that have nothing to do. Why does he ever write anything for gays? Have you noticed that, or is it just me?
I wonder if maybe it's just not his forte, you know. Like, I think did we ever talk about Girls? Have we talked about Girls at all, the show? Have you watched Girls?
Yeah, you and I privately have talked about Girls.
We've talked about Girls privately. Woo. No, but there was an essay recently. People were bitching about how she doesn't put any women of color in her show. And she and Lena Dunham, who I'm starting to like more and more, said, you know, it's not about women of color. This is about what I know. I'm a white, upper middle class, educated woman who's dealing with these problems. And of being, you know, a recent college grad or whatever she is, white upper middle class kid who's, you know, kind of a slacker and whatever, trying to make it in the world. She's like, I wouldn't know how to write about a black character. And I thought that was a pretty smart answer. Maybe that's what Sorkin is thinking. Maybe he doesn't feel comfortable. I don't know. But maybe he will eventually. He's a smart guy, and I think he's savvy enough to be able to handle it, but maybe he doesn't want to seem too forced. Does that make sense?
I don't know. I have a feeling in my mind, if you have the ego, and not in a bad way, but if you have the ego where you're smart enough in your mind to write for the Secretary of Defense or the General of an Army or many, many other characters you probably would know nothing about, I think you can write a gay guy. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can write a lesbian. And by the way, I hate that argument. What Lena Dunham should have said, and I like him too. I like her too, and I like her show. I just hated the season finale. I thought was pretentious garbage. But the thing I like about her is that she's honest. But what I don't like in that answer and what I would have said was I just have no interest in writing those characters. Because I think that...
I agree. Sorry, go ahead.
You can write a black person. You can write an Asian person. Like, here's the thing. When I write, as a writer, I don't write thinking of color, period. And when it comes to
I
feel like you could get anybody in any role. In any role. So, unless you're writing specifically for something like that.
I mean, there's some hipsters on the newsroom. There's a couple hipsters in there.
Hipsters, but...
Yeah, there are hipsters, right. Yeah.
I love how Alex put hipster and gay together.
Way to go, Alex. No, but I agree. I mean, I agree. I would never... I agree with her. It's like I'm not interested in writing those people and writing about people who aren't like me. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
And I think that some people thought, like, oh my God, that's racist. But it's like, no, it's not. It's not. It's just this is what I know. There's nothing wrong with writing about what I know. Why do I have to incorporate everything, every person in the world when I... It just wouldn't work. It would sound forced. I don't know. That sounds, you know, I thought that she didn't handle herself really well when she wrote that. Maybe, I don't know. You're probably right about Sorkin. I don't know, but it just seems like...
I guess her fear...
What's the big deal? Just let him write a story. Let everybody write a story. Why does everything have to be labeled?
Aaron, her fear is exactly what I'm saying, where I'm picking out the black Republican named Gary Cooper on Aaron Sorkin's TV show that he gives five lines to, and they're all about how Obama sucks, and it's kind of, in a weird way, that character's almost a stereotype. And I think she's concerned if she wrote for somebody and did it like that, you have some asshole like me going, oh, she wrote a black person in, and then she just talked about how black they were.
I'd like to meet that.
What was that, Alex? What did you say?
The black Republican? Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Oh, no, they're ass.
He's like Michael Steele. He's like a combo of Michael Steele and Alan West and... What's his nutty name from Illinois that ran against Obama? Keyes. Is that his name? I don't remember. Alan Keyes, a nut job who has a lesbian daughter but hates gays. Yeah, charming.
In that show, if they put his Obama-hating black character up against a white person who loves Obama, I think they actually kind of killed what makes it interesting by having a black woman who loves Obama defending him all the time. That's I actually think there's some spice in it if you have the liberal white girl who like creams her pants over Obama, which and then you have the black guy who's actually against Obama. That's interesting to me. Making it two black people doesn't really make it interesting to me. It makes it look like some like Tyler Perry blooper reel that they threw into the new
Tyler Perry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Is witness protection yet, Julia?
What's that?
You didn't see the new Madea movie last weekend?
Oh, you know, no. I have to say I've seen it like 20 times because, you know, I love him. No, I'm just kidding. But I, as I said, I think once I said earlier in the week, I'd like to see Madea and Ted go at it in a death match, because that would be a fun thing to see, the teddy bear and Madea going at it in the octagon. This is just, both of them just annoy the crap out of me.
Everyone at the ZZ Top concert I was at last night, because that was Klan rally waiting to happen.
Neighborhood?
Okay, let me tell you something. So I go to this thing called Rib Fest, right?
And
it's 100 degrees, I'm sweating, and I'm in the mosh pit. Because for whatever reason, my 59-year-old dad wants to be in the mosh
pit. Mosh pit. You are kidding me.
Oh, I'm not. Everyone in this mosh pit area is wearing tank tops, their teeth are bad, or they have no teeth, they stink, they're spitting chew everywhere. They were texting during the anthem. Like, they were just the worst people ever. And I got to tell you, it was like a Klan rally. You should have heard what certain people were saying about Obama, just unmitigated, unprovoked, throwing out slurs, and I'm like, this is Naperville.
Yeah, well, you're basically, Naperville is like Orange County.
I mean, that's part of
DuPage County, with the exception of, I think, my family, which, you know, lives in northern DuPage County. Everybody else is a Republican. It's as red as the fucking South, you know, so it's, yeah, I'm not surprised.
I'm sitting there, and I really just wanted to say to all these white people who obviously hate the black man, I wanted to say, you do know you're at Rib Fest, right? We wouldn't have black man. So go eat your ribs and then complain about how much they suck.
It's like I have a brother-in-law who does concert sound. He's a mixer for concerts, and he was doing a Ted Nugent concert a few years ago. he's got the crowd riled up, and he's like, and Ted, you know, whatever the fuck they call him, he's like, oh, fuck Obama, fuck liberals, fuck everybody, fuck any non-white, fuck Asians, and Joe just was like, I had to restrain myself and just find a filter and electrocute him. He said he was so obnoxious. That's Ted Nugent. That's his shtick. You know, that's what he does. He's a big fat asshole who shoots animals.
I didn't know ZZ Top though was that deep with like the southern white racist. I didn't know that.
But look where they're from. They're from Texas, right? Aren't they from Texas or something? And it's just, you look at them and you can't help but think, okay. Yeah, they're up there with, you know, with the Klan, maybe. I don't know.
I am going to very much say to my listeners right now, don't ever go to Naperville Rib Fest. All you're going to do is sweat, smell, and stand next to a bunch of rednecks with terrible tattoos, and they'll be spitting near your feet, and it's just not a fun time.
The ribs are good, though.
What were some of the tattoos?
All these, like, real bad tattoos, and you know they're real cheap and stuff, because it's just that black ink, and it's like the designs are bad. But they'd have, like, one guy, a lot of crosses, because, you know, they love Jesus.
Course.
They love Jesus.
Yeah.
A lot of crosses. I saw a lot of crosses. I saw a lot of things that I couldn't even tell you what it was. Like, it just looked like they got it when they were younger and thin, and now that they're fat, it's stretched out. And
Yeah.
So I don't know. Real bad tattoos, though. And I got to correct you. The food there's no good.
No?
Here's the thing about the food there.
Wow.
Making ribs. Well, everyone says wow, but you got to think about it. When you're making ribs and you're serving them that quickly,
true.
How can you make ribs good that quickly? You can't. You can't. It's real.
I don't know how you can eat. I don't know how you can eat when it's that hot outside.
No. Oh, neither do I.
Oh man, it's like, hi, hello, salmonella 101. I mean, ew, gross.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's too hot to eat that kind of food. Like, we went to a tent, and it's like hot mac and cheese for $4.
No.
You eat mac and cheese hot when it's 100 degrees.
I want some ice-cold potato salad.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, because then you don't even want potato salad because it's got mayo in it, and it's 100 degrees. So I'm probably eating bad.
E. coli.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not that great. The reason I think people rave about Rib Fest food, and just like every fest, is because these are people that can't cook. They don't go out to good restaurants. They eat fast food most of the time, and they're like, ooh, ribs. Now this is the good shit. Now, you can go to 100 different barbecue places in the city that have way better ribs. Way better ribs. I don't know. And you'd be paying the price because it was like $25 for a slab of ribs.
Ew.
Yeah.
Was it all doctors and attorneys just bitching him on it was too hot?
No! Doctors and attorneys wouldn't. Yeah, but that's the thing. I don't think these are people from Naperville. I'm starting to realize, I think people heard about Rib Fest in, like, Aurora and, like, Morris, Illinois.
Aurora.
And they take a bus. No, it's awful. It's awful. I don't know.
It used to be really cool, I thought. Wasn't it, like, the cool thing to do out in the suburbs in the summertime?
It used
to go to Rib Fest?
In the 90s, it used to be good.
Yeah, it used to be fun. Now there's not a lot of kids there now. It's weird. It's a ton of hicks. A ton of hits. I don't know, Julie, if you noticed this when you lived in Chicago, but we've really kind of turned into a southern town.
Yeah.
They love country music here now. They love it. Come on.
I know.
Music's big here.
It is big. I can't say
it. It is.
I mean, I like
it. It is. Here.
Yeah, I don't know. I got a phone call here, an 81. Number. Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
Oh, hey, this is Lyndon Ashby. I was supposed to call in.
Oh, Mr. Ashby, how are you?
I'm good. Is this the right number?
Yeah, this is the right number. We're just complaining about Rib Fest. Don't worry about it.
You're complaining about what?
I'm complaining about Rib Fest. We have this rib festival in the suburbs of Chicago that's just turned into the worst thing ever.
Really?
Yeah.
What's a shit fest?
Oy. You know what? But yeah. Chicago's always been kind of, you know, like a meat town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but they're serving these ribs real fast, so they're not even that good. And then I went to a ZZ Top concert, and these guys were like, and I have nothing wrong. I have no problem with people who are into that kind of I love ZZ Top, but like country-style music or country-style anything. I love the South, but I do have a problem with racists. And there were a lot of, like, racists. Shoe-spitting hicks in Naperville. And I'm like, what happened? When did this happen? So, disappointing. That's disappointing. Julia, just to wrap up so I could talk to Lyndon.
Yeah, of
we're
course.
We're giving the newsroom a couple more episodes, but we're not sold yet.
Yeah. I'm still, we'll talk more. I'll be back on the 4th, so, you know, I can come in and help you out with your show if you want.
I'd love you to. And here's what... I will start liking the newsroom once they actually develop a storyline.
Okay. Works for me. All right. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Okay, Mr. Ashby. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I got to tell you, I was very excited to have you on for two reasons. One, growing up as a kid, I was like, what was I like? 12 years old when Mortal Kombat came out.
Phenomenal.
So to me, that was like the biggest deal of all time.
You know, it's been kind of a cool thing to have been involved with because it's, I mean, to this day, it's like, I think that there's like a, you know, people say it's generational. I'm like, nah, it's multi-generational because I get guys from like, you know, 12 years old to, you know, 40 years old that are like, dude, you're Johnny Cage. it was a cool movie to be in.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun movie. And then the other thing, of course, was I don't know why, but at 12 years old, I really got into Melrose Place. I'm not
really.
I think my hormones were going a little woo 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 at that time.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, Heather Locklear.
Ooh, yeah,
and
Heather.
Yeah, there were some ladies on that show that were winners.
You know what? Yeah, the crazy thing about that show is I got on, and I was only on for a little over a year, right?
Yeah.
And it was those women were prettier off screen than they were on screen.
Wow.
I mean, they were beautiful. They were beautiful. The only, you know, every now and then, you know, you'll see actresses that, and you see them without the war paint on, right? And you're like, whoa, wow, boom, you know. And then you see these, like, I remember meeting Kim Basinger one time.
Yeah.
And I never thought, I know she did it for a lot of people. She wasn't my cup of tea or whatever. She was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And I mean, it's like, and I've seen a lot of beautiful women, and she was just stunning. Like, wow. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah. And the women on Melrose Place, it was they were lookers.
Well, Heather Locklear, she's like one of the most beautiful women of all time. I got it.
You know what?
Imagine.
And Heather was fun too.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. Heather was a she could party.
Were they?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that had to be crazy. Like, this was before big-time paparazzi, but I got to imagine you guys still had a lot of paparazzi.
Yeah. And, I mean, we shot out in the middle of nowhere. We shot way out in Simi Valley, and so they weren't around there, but, you know, in town and whatnot, yeah, they'd be around.
Right. To dinner, and they all think you guys are dating each other and screwing each other. And yeah, I can imagine. Because that's a hot show.
Yeah.
That was like Desperate Housewives before Desperate Housewives. That was like a big deal, Melrose Place. It changed the Dallas and Dynasty. It changed the melodrama for like ever, the soap at night.
Yeah, it did. It did. It was this sort of cultural phenomenon, you know, this pop phenomenon. And I mean, Aaron Spelling was genius.
Yeah.
He really was. And you know, he did Dynasty too, and the advertising campaign for Melrose Place was picture of Heather and Monday Nights Are a Bitch, and that was brilliant. it was great.
Did you have any problems working on that show? Because I know you weren't around for like the whole period of time. Was there a reason for that? Like, what was there any issues at all doing that show?
No, you know, I had, you know what, the funny thing is like, I had just come off this show on ABC that was like, you know, sort of, it was a show called Spy Game, and we got bought and developed when Capital Cities owned ABC, and then between the time we got bought and ordered, Disney bought ABC, so we were sort of the bastard stepchild sort of, and they didn't want anything to do with us, so we got canceled on that, and I was bummed because the show was good. And I took off on a surf trip. I went to Costa Rica, and this was before, you know, cell phone service in Costa Rica. You couldn't, you know, I was out of touch, and I was down there for a couple weeks, and my agent was getting these calls from Spelling. And they're like, will Lyndon do the show? And he goes, I don't know. He's in Costa Rica. And then they call back the next day. Will he do it? We'll pay this much. And my agent's like, I don't know. He's in Costa Rica. And they called the next day, and they were like, we'll pay this much. And so by the time I came back, it was like the most genius negotiating that I ever did in my life, because I had no idea what was going on. I'd have probably said, yeah, the first time. By the time I got back, it was like, okay, you got this job, and it's for this much money, and do you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah. but I kind of came in late, and I was good friends with Grant Cho, who was on it for like the first 5 years, and then he had left. And we had been friends in New York, and then he had moved to L.A., and he, like, we were neighbors, and so we were buddies. So I kind of knew all those guys a little bit, but I was a little late to the party, and, you know, it was it was such a big ensemble cast. People just sort of, you know, they showed up and they did their job and they went home. It was, there was no kind of like we hang together, we do together and that kind of stuff. It was a well-oiled machine. We did 32, 34 shows a year.
Wow.
And yeah, we cranked them out.
Wow. Nowadays you get 22 episodes a season if you're lucky. You guys have many, man.
I know. I mean, I got excited because with Teen Wolf, we got picked up next year for 24, and I'm like, okay, good. Now, whether they do 24 and they try to make two seasons out of it, I don't know.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't know you guys got picked up for 24. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Outstanding. Because Teen Wolf, that's a huge hit on MTV.
Big.
I was just going to say, what a genius concept. Taking that, you know, they know that there's a little name value with the movie, but overall it's just a cool name. And they really just turned the concept on its head. It really has nothing to do with the old movies. Nothing.
And for me, it was like, actually, when I heard, you know, Teen Wolf, I was like, really? And then I read the script, and I was blown away. It was really good. And you know, that's Jeff Davis. You know, he created Criminal Minds.
Oh wow!
And yeah, and now you know Teen Wolf, and he's so involved, and he's such a good writer. And it really, the older I get, the more I realize that it's writing. Without really good writing, you got nothing.
Well, I mean, it stands up there with True Blood. I mean, the only thing missing is all the sex. I mean, it's kind of True Blood with werewolves instead of vampires. And I know, especially the teen demographics eating that show up.
My cousins.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, they measure stuff now like we are the most social television show on the air right now, meaning, you know, people tweet, talk, do, you know, they're online active about the program. And it's weird because, you know, the numbers in a weird way don't reflect that, but they show, you know, they'll show the show, what, I don't know how many times during the week. So you get people who catch every episode, and it's amazing. Yeah, within the demographic, we're hitting it out of the park. And that's, look, I'm neither a teen nor a wolf, so I don't have a ton to do with it. But it's pretty cool, and the kids on this show are fantastic.
Well,
they really are.
Well, Alex, what were you saying about your cousins love it?
Yeah, I got a couple. I got twin girl cousins and mother.
How old? How old are the cousins?
One's 16, and the twin girls are 13.
They love it.
Oh my god.
Yep.
But their mom loves it too.
Yeah, the mom loves it. My auntie Susie loves it. They tweet and text like 20,000 times a day. It's amazing how much these teens text and tweet. And
that's all they do is text.
All they do is text and tweet. It's like 10,000.
I had a girl that actually told me today. You know, Melissa.
Yeah.
Melissa told me today, I'd rather you call me instead of text me. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Wait, oh, really? Okay, I love that. But you know me, I hit on a lot of younger women, and they don't call.
No.
There's no phone calling anymore. No. It's all texting.
Yeah, meet me here.
Yeah. What's that all about? Explain it to me.
It's all about Lyndon. I got to tell you, man, do you have kids?
Yeah, I do. I have two daughters who are older. I mean, 21 and 20.
So they just text. They're big texters, right?
They do. They text. Like crazy, they call me, but they you know, everything else is texting, and they're just freaking wicked fast texting too. That's the amazing thing. I'm like text. You know, I finally got the iPhone with the Siri, so I can talk to the thing and it'll text, and so I feel pretty good. But
text. It's just text.
It's weird. I mean, because when texting first came out, I was like, this is the dumbest thing in the world, because it's like, you got a telephone. Telephone replaced telegraph, and now we're going back to telegraph.
Yeah.
But
going back
shows what I know.
I think people like it because they can talk to numerous people at a time. I think that.
Yeah, the whole group texting thing.
Yeah.
I don't get that, and I'm always a little, you know, like I'll get a text, and I guess I'm in a group, and I don't even know I'm in a group, and I respond, and then someone's like, "Who's this?"
Yeah. Yep.
I'm like, "Well, I'm me. Who are you? Why are you responding to my text?"
My friend Mike Binder, who of course is the director and owner of Coney Dog, and Mike, I included him in a group text once, and he goes, "Maddie, don't ever do that to me again." And then I accidentally did it one more time, and he goes, "Okay, Maddie, stop being a fucking asshole."
Well,
he goes, "My daughter does it to me all the time. I hate it. The group texting. He hates it."
Well, and all the 630 area code numbers are like, "Who is this 904 number?"
No, I hate it too, but that's what they do.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's, well, we're out of the loop, man. And that's, you know, that's the other thing is, you know, and I don't think we were any different, you know, but it's, you know, you see these kids and they're just grinding, right? They're just texting. And you're like, "What are you doing there? You know, who are you texting?" And they kind of give you this look of like, it's like none of your business.
Yeah, you can't even spy as a parent anymore. Like my
No, it's a club, man, and it's need to know. And you're not in the loop, and you don't need to know, and therefore you won't know.
I remember at night, and I'd call a girl on the landline at the house.
Yeah.
11 o'clock, and I knew, I could hear the click on the other end. I knew my ma was, like, eavesdropping. So
oh, my God.
You can't do that anymore.
No, thank God.
And I used to tell myself, "Ooh, I can't wait to do this to my kids." No, I can't.
Yeah.
They came up with a way.
Yeah. Ready? Mom, hang up the phone. Mom. Mom. Yes. I'm on the phone here. I'm having a private conversation. Time for your bed. Time for bed. It's time for you to get in the bath. And yeah, I'm like, "Mom."
Now, let me ask you this. Did you meet your wife, of course, famous actress Susan Walters? She was on Melrose Place as well. She's
what?
On the Vampire Diaries now, correct? So you got vampires and werewolves in your house. You got
we do.
You got the market cornered.
You know, Suze is, we do. We got the market cornered. We got vampires, werewolves. And, you know, Suze was, everyone knows, like, she did this mini series years ago called Elvis and Me, which is like this thing that it's one of those, you know, crazy that people are still watching all the time. She played Priscilla.
Yeah.
And then she did, you know, she's got this one thing on her resume that every time she walks in a room, they're like, "Ah, she was Mulva on Seinfeld."
Yeah, Mulva. Yep.
And, you know, so it's like people are like, "Mulva!" Yeah.
Oh, it's great. That episode's great. I love that one. Rhymes with a female body part.
Yeah.
Mulva?
Yeah. Dolores! Mulva!
Dolores! Did you meet her on Melrose Place, Susan, or did you guys meet before that?
No, man, we met doing a soap in New York when we were really young, called Loving, an ABC soap. And it's funny. I was actually like doing just a guest spot on the show, and she was a regular on the show. And I guess she walked in, and you know, we rehearsed, and she went back to the makeup room, and she told the makeup artist, she said, "I'm going to marry that guy." And the makeup artist was like, "Well, let me check it out." And, you know, and I was dating somebody else. And so we didn't, she came to a party at my house, actually. I was with another girl. She went with another guy. And, you know, we really didn't, we'd see each other around New York. You know, we were living in New York then. And, you know, I'd see her around, and then I actually got on that soap as a regular, and I asked her out, and we went out for, like, 3 months. I asked her to marry me. We got married less than 3 months later. She was 21. I was 24, 25.
That's crazy. So, wait, you guys are real young.
Yeah. I mean, what are the odds of that working, right?
Right. And you have real quick, and you guys have been together forever now. So, how did you ask her to marry you in 3 months, though? Like, what was the proposal 3 months in?
Oh, man. Should I even tell you? Well, laying in bed at night, and I went, what do you think about marriage? What do you think? Would you consider? And she's like, are you asking me to marry you? And I went, yeah, I guess, hypothetically, yeah. And, away it went. That was it. I wasn't,
That's nice. That's good.
And there was no bended knee or anything. It was in the dark. And
the next thing, are you wondering, like, what the fuck did I just do?
No, I wasn't. I was excited.
You were in love.
Yeah, I was in love, and I still am. And that's a good thing.
That's so awesome. A buddy of mine says he's friends with you. I don't believe my buddy could be friends with anyone as cool as you. You know Larry Poindexter?
I do know Poindexter. I do. I do.
Right, all right.
How do you know Larry?
Checks out.
I love Larry. All right. It checks out, right? All right. Well, would you got any good Larry stories?
Oh, my God. You know what? Plays guitar pretty well.
Yeah,
he's super good guy. Known him forever. He worked with Susan on this show called Nightingales, another spelling show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, and he's married to Carol.
Oh, yeah. They have a very happy marriage. Very.
Yeah.
You know what? And my producer just reminded me, your wife is in one of my favorite movies of all time, Defending Your Life.
Yes, she is.
Plays Albert Brooks in it, and my favorite movies ever. The best.
It's a great one. That's a great movie. She's got that great scene where she's, he's going to ask for a raise. Albert's great, and Albert and I had the same manager for years, and so I got to hang out with him quite a bit, and what a crazy, crazy good guy.
Is he's as cool as everyone thinks?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
And he's as smart as you would think.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a bunch of interviews with him and stuff, and he rarely does interviews, so when you can catch him. He's great, and he's so smart and talented. And that movie is just so ahead of its time. It's genius.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. You know what I was going to ask you? So how'd you even get started then? I mean, you're a real good-looking guy. We got that. And you're a good actor. Okay, but were you always a good actor? Did you want to act forever, or what happened?
No, I didn't. I went to college, and I was a business psychology major, split major. And I started doing plays. And I dug it. And then I realized this is what I want to do. And so I dropped out of college after my junior year. My parents were like, come on, don't do this. Just, you got one more year, graduate. And I'm like, no. And I went to New York and studied in New York with a guy named Sandy Meisner, who was this great acting teacher. And studied for a couple of years with him. And then got lucky and started working, and I did a lot of theater, and then I did this soap, and like I said, I did the soap in New York, and then we moved to LA, and I was there for like 2 or 3 weeks, and I got this gig called Poor Little Rich Girl with Farrah Fawcett.
Oh,
right. Okay, so here's a good Hollywood story.
Yeah. I love
so,
Fawcett story.
She was great. And I'm doing the scene with her, and I'm playing her son. And I come in, and man, I'm like green. Acting. This is my first big job, and she's supposed to be drunk and dancing around, and she's in her robe. I'm with my girlfriend, and she falls on the ground. My girlfriend leaves, and I'm really pissed off at my mom because she's drunk and has embarrassed me in front of my girlfriend. Well, it's my coverage, right? The camera's pointing at me, and Farrah falls on the ground. This Harry Winston sapphire that she's wearing comes up and like whacks her in the eye. And she's in this robe, and she goes down the ground, and the robe just opens.
Oh,
mom!
And she's got nothing on underneath.
Yeah.
And sorry, I don't know what there's a crazy something going by here. I'm standing in the backyard. Some weird. I'm in Florida, and some like mosquito truck just went by.
Oh, mosquitoes are the worst. Oh my God!
I know. Oh. So the robe just opens, and she's kind of sitting on the floor. Her legs are a little open. It's gapped open in the top, and I'm like looking, trying to get through the scene, and all I'm thinking is, holy shit, that's Farrah Fawcett's coochie, and then I'm like, oh my God, there's the nipple from the poster. And she just looks at me and is like, okay, tough guy, let's see you get through this scene. And it was hilarious. And all I could think about is, this is the greatest business in the world.
Oh, I hope I have that moment one day.
Oh, man.
Oh, I love it. I was going to ask you is one of my producers told me that you are a surfer. Is that true?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
All right. Do you know another buddy of mine, big surf guy, Brett Cullen?
You know, okay, well, I know Brett. I've known Brett for years. We were all friends. Kyle McLaughlin and lived next door to Brett. And so Brett and Kyle and I were friends. And Brett and I were friends. And, I've known Brett forever. Brett and Michelle. Yep.
He's the cool dude. Yeah, he's great. So do you guys ever surf together or do you,
I don't know. I've never surfed with him, so I don't know. I don't know what it's like in Chicago, but like in LA, everybody goes, no, I'm a surfer, man. I'm like a world champion surfer. And then you surf with them, you're like, oh my God, really? Come on. It's the same thing like with skiing. Yes, I'm world class skier. I was on the Olympic team. And then you ski with them, and you're like, fuck, really? I don't know. I've never surfed with him. I don't know.
He's good.
Is he good? Oh, he surfs?
He surfs all the time. Like, I'll go to his house. He lives a mile from Venice. He lives a mile from Venice.
Yeah.
Just walk there. And he has, like, this is how you know he's a legit surfer. He has a shower in his backyard. So, like, he can go, like, shower in the corner of the backyard, not because you don't want to bring sand into the house. There you go.
Yeah. Well, then, there you go.
He's legit. He has a shower in the backyard.
Him and McConaughey.
And do you really have a plane too, Lyndon?
I used to. I had a plane for years. And then my girls got older and they wanted horses. And I figured I could only afford one stupid thing at a time. and so we have horses instead of planes. And let me tell you something. Planes are a lot cheaper than horses.
Yeah, I believe it. About your plane because Dennis Quaid used to park his plane, I believe, at the Van Nuys Airport. And
yeah.
Heard one of the guys that was over there. You had your plane there, I heard.
I did. And Dennis and I know each other. We did Wyatt Earp together.
Yeah.
And we'd fly together. And Dennis is cool.
He's the cool.
I don't know if Dennis is still flying or not.
He is.
I have not flown since I sold my plane, so it's been 10, 11 years, something like that.
Do you miss it?
I do. You know, I miss the convenience of it, of like, you know, if it's within like 500 miles or whatever, it's a great way to get somewhere. And you know, like we're living in Atlanta right now.
Yeah.
And I would love to have a plane to get down to the Bahamas and sort of island hop and keep going.
Show in Atlanta?
Say what?
Are you doing the show in Atlanta?
Yeah, well, next year we're in L.A., apparently. But we've been in Atlanta for the first two seasons.
Right, good tax credits over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. No, you actually did, of course, you did Wyatt Earp with Dennis, which is a great movie. Dennis is the best guy. Kevin Costner's in that movie, I believe, too, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Everybody connected to this show, Lyndon Ashby, he knows them all. He knows
you know, it's like instead of, what is it, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever, it's like, yeah.
It's 1 degree of Lyndon Ashby on this show. It doesn't even take...
Yeah, you know, it's not even a hop, skip, and a jump. It's just a hop.
What a great movie, though, Wyatt Earp. Did you not, like, have a blast working on that movie? And those guys are all cool. I've met all those guys, and I know that had to be a blast.
You know what? It was really cool. And, I mean, if I could, the one thing I wish I could go back and do it again and not be, like, worried that it was, you know, it was, like, a big, huge movie. And I think I was too kind of, like, you know, nervous. I should have just had more fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a blast of a cast, I can tell you that.
Yep. No, we spent a good bit of time in the bar.
Now, I totally believe that.
Oh, yeah.
do you golf at all? Are you a golfer?
I used to golf quite a bit. So Dennis and I golfed a ton on that movie.
Yeah.
And you know, and Mark Harmon, who's is probably one of the greatest guys in the world. He was on that film, and so I golf with Dennis, and then go fish with Mark, and you know, we just hung out, man. It was a good group of people.
We understand, Lyndon. There are only certain stories you can tell on the air.
True.
I can imagine what you're holding back. All right, now, is this true?
No, we haven't talked about Kevin.
I haven't talked about Kevin. Did you golf Kevin too? Because he golfs and he's a funny guy.
he's a funny guy, and his marriage was sort of going sideways at that point, and I was just kind of watching from the sidelines, going, "Holy shit." Really? Your marriage is going south? Why? He's all right guy. He's a good guy. And no, I don't know if I golfed him or not.
Yeah, because he's a big golfer. He's just one of those guys, though. Anything he touches turns into gold.
Yeah. I mean, he just had this crazy cleanup thing in the Gulf, right?
Yeah, they paid him $52 million to sell them the idea to clean up the Gulf or whatever. I'm like, are you...
And then Stephen Baldwin is suing him because he says he got gypped or something?
Yeah, because, I believe the jury's going to believe Stephen Baldwin on that one.
Yeah, I've worked with him, too.
Steve, is he... Now, wait, is Stephen more nuts now than he used to be, or has he always been just out of his mind?
I have no idea. I haven't seen him, so I can't compare nuttiness.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. I'll take it.
Next question.
That answers it for me anyway. I was going to ask you, though, about Mortal Kombat. There was a rumor a long time ago. I don't know if it's ever been cleared up, but, you know, growing up during that time, being a big movie freak, of course, I was enthralled with Brandon Lee, the Crow. Over the role for him as Johnny Cage?
You know, I have heard that, but I think the first time I ever heard that was like a few years, you know, like 10, I don't know, well after the movie. I don't know. I have no idea. And, you know, I'm real good friends with Paul Anderson, the director.
Yeah.
So, you know what, next time I see him, I'm going to ask him.
Yeah.
I'll probably be hanging out with him, you know, staying with him in L.A., so I will put it to him. I'll be like, dude, come on. What are you talking about? Really? I wouldn't have gotten the part.
Paul's a fun director, though. I mean, thanks to those Resident Evil movies, I don't think he ever has to work again if you don't want to.
and then you marry Mila, and life is good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, wow, what a lucky guy, Mila, too. Oh, man.
She's
one of those, like, exotic actresses. Like, you watch her, and there's just something about her that you don't see with other actresses. Like, not just the way she looks, but just the way she is. Like, you're just, like, blown away. Like,
you know what? She's well, first of all, she's just beautiful and really smart. And, you know, and she did some great, interesting movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, so, yeah, she's two just, thumbs up.
Just a real
two thumbs up.
Do you think you and Paul will work together again?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I was in one of the Resident Evil movies. I don't what Extinction or something like that.
Yeah, the Extinction, that's right.
Out in the desert. And that's where I worked with Russell Mulcahy, who directed that one. Who is director producer on Teen Wolf.
It all comes together, full circle.
It all comes back. I'm telling you, it's just a hop. There's no skip or jump. And the cool thing with Russell is, like, you go back in MTV land, and Russell directed, you know, did, let's be fair, 70% of, like, the transformative videos on MTV, all the Duran Duran videos, all, you know, Hungry Like a Wolf, all that Rio, all this stuff. All these videos that pretty much put MTV on the map. And then he turns around and he directs their first successful scripted drama. Now, what are the odds of that?
Yeah. No, yeah, that's just right. He's an MTV guy.
He's such a. I don't know if you ever had a chance to talk to him or meet him. He is one of the sweetest, funniest guys that you'll ever meet in your life.
Yeah, well, that's good. At least you're on a set where you're happy.
Yeah, no, I am. Absolutely. It's I look forward to going to work every day.
I mean, you don't have to tell me what it was, but there have been, of course, sets where you haven't been happy. And what's the experience like going to work every day on Teen Wolf, which you really enjoy? It seems like they're like reinventing this werewolf genre by the day over there. To compared to where you go to work and you're not really enjoying yourself. I mean, yeah, obviously one is you're enjoying and one you're not. But what are the subtle differences that people may know or not know?
Well, I always think that, like, I think it starts sort of from the top. You know, you get Jeff, and then you get Dylan and Tyler Posey and Dylan O'Brien and Crystal Reed, who they, you know, like a movie set or a TV set is it's like a party, you know, and they are the host. They set the tone. And when it works right, it's amazing. You know, it's like this collaborative effort, and everyone's involved and everyone's digging what they're doing. And when it doesn't, and you got, you know, pick your star, you know, on a show that you've heard bad things about, right?
Yeah.
And I've worked with a few of them.
Sure.
And you just, it's so different. I mean, it's so different. And, you know, there are people that look, not to, you know, be Pollyanna or whatever, but yeah, we work hard, right, as actors and as radio, you know, host.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know what, why don't you go dig ditches for a week or two?
Right. No, it's true.
And then talk to me about how hard you're working.
No, it's
And people sort of, people say, the biggest pitfall is people start believing their own bullshit. And they just, you know, they lose sight of you're getting to do what you love to do and you're getting paid really well to do it. And, yeah, you work crazy hours. I mean, these kids are working, you know, 13, 14 hours a day. And they grind them. I mean, they're grinding these kids. And but they come to work every single day. They're prepared. They're happy to be there. They laugh their asses off. They have fun. And they're incredibly talented.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know what more you could ask for.
Well, it has to be that kind of respect issue, you know.
No,
say what?
What were you saying, Alan?
Like that just kind of more like a respect towards everybody, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no. They and that's an interesting thing. Is like, I remember working with Lawrence Kasdan on Wyatt Earp, and the first day of rehearsal, he said, "Look, I have one rule on my movies." He said, "Everyone has to be treated with respect."
Exactly.
And that goes from the lowest guy on the totem pole to the highest guy. And if you can't do that,
Walk
out of the room right now because I don't want you.
I think that's a huge thing in the workforce with everybody today. There's just not enough respect towards one another. It's like I'm trying to do a good job. You know, everyone's trying to be on the same page. You got to respect one another and have a good time.
I agree. And when you don't have that, there's a huge problem. It is. I mean, look, making a movie is not. There's not one guy who makes it. It's the most collaborative thing you can possibly do. It's a group effort. You have so many people putting in brutal hours to make this thing happen. And, you know, they're giving up, you know, they're sacrificing family time, they're sacrificing quality of life, they're you know, and everyone is striving towards one thing, to get something something great, you know, to catch lightning in a bottle.
It's
an amazing thing to be a part of. And it's not like being a painter where you sit and you have that canvas and you paint. It's not like being a musician where you play your guitar. It takes a village to make a movie. It does. And everybody's gotta do their part, and everybody's part is important. Enough of that, right?
Ask you something else that I had on my mind, and then I want to ask you about Teen Wolf. You did The Gates on ABC a few years ago.
I did.
It was a summer show, and you know, it was. Did you work with Frank Grillo at all on that show?
I did.
Yeah, Frank's someone I know, and like he is really taken off. And did you happen to see his work in The Gray?
I didn't see The Gray. I saw Warriors, which was, you know, I didn't know what to expect because it sort of came out and they didn't market it right. I thought it was kind of an MMA. I thought it was actually guys from the MMA making this movie, and I thought, whatever. And then we got the SAG Award or the Academy Award screeners, and I watched this movie. I'm like, holy shit, this thing's great. Frank is great in this. it was such a good movie, and he was so good in it. And
yeah.
And that was a set that was not real harmonious.
No, it was not.
Yeah. Enough said on that, right?
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah. No, well, gosh. I mean, I guess. I mean, I think I've talked about it on the show before that there's a certain actor from that film, who's coming up in a big film in the next month, who people just cannot stand to work with.
Next.
Yeah. Anyway you want from there. I got to tell you, though, Frank is one of those guys that's really going to break out. And what I was going to ask you is there any work that maybe our listeners may have not seen of yours that you would want to, like, this is the Lyndon Ashby, like, pinnacle. This is, like, my best acting in this.
Oh, my God. You know, I did a little tiny movie a few years ago called Hunger, and it's just a really good movie. It's sort of a psychological horror drama, you know, blah blah blah. Enough about that, but it I'm that was a movie that we did for nothing, and it was one of those great experiences, and then the film turned out really well. So that would be a movie that I would, if you haven't seen it, I'd watch it, because it's actually, you're going to enjoy it.
So it's like a horror movie, or is it more of a thriller, or?
It's basically five people wake up in this room, like a cavern almost, this chamber at the bottom of a dry well.
Okay.
And they don't know each other. They don't know how they got there. And there's 200 gallons of water and no food. And it sounds kind of like a Saw-ish kind of thing, but it's not. It's much more sort of character-driven, in your head kind of thing. And it's really who is going to get hungry enough to do the unthinkable.
Like psychological thrillers in a way.
Yeah. I mean, it's a character-driven piece that you know. Look, it's you've got your horror elements, because it does happen. People eat each other. But it's just sort of the breakdown of it's the loss of humanity in a weird way.
Yeah. I guess my last thing I want to know about you is especially about, are you a Dolphins fan, since you're a guy?
I'm a huge Dolphin fan.
Oh, boy.
All right. I got someone who's the inside down there.
No
right.
Bucks, huh?
No Bucks. We didn't have Bucks when I was a kid. I mean, what we had, because I grew up near Jacksonville, I grew up in a little town called Atlantic Beach, and we had the Dolphins for football, and then we had the Braves for baseball, and that was it. And there was no Tampa Bay,
yeah,
Buccaneers.
One of the girls from our hometown was a Miami Dolphins cheerleader for a while. There's talent on that.
They do all right.
There's some talent on that squad, let me tell you.
They do all right. Now, Lyndon, you're on the inside with this whole Dolphin thing. They haven't been good for a few years, no offense. All right.
Wait, how many years?
It's been a couple years.
How many?
They had a winning season like 2-3 years ago, was it? The first season.
You know what? They will. It was so funny. I was in Toronto. And I got on an elevator, a guy had a Dolphins hat, and we started talking, and he goes, every year they just fucking break my heart. And I'm like, I'm right there with you. What, well, 1972 we were undefeated.
Yes, but let's be honest, you've been waiting since Marino to have, like, a really good year. And
well, since Marino, I think we've, okay, let's go through it. There was Fiedler.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, come on. Who's the other? Okay.
You guys try out Warren Moon at one point, like when he was like really old.
Yeah, they might have wheeled him onto the field. We could have got Drew Brees, but we went with Culpepper instead.
Right, you went with Dante. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that didn't work out all that well.
No.
And then we had. Look, it's like we've had 20 quarterbacks that have been, you know, I think Fiedler was probably the best one of the bunch. And then we had Henny,
yeah,
who was just, oh, my God, what a disaster.
Yeah, and then you had A.J. Feely, too, I think.
We had Feely. We had Fiedler, Feely. Who's the Mormon kid? God, I can't remember his name. We tried him for a while. We had Henny. It's been one disaster after another.
So what's this
like? Say what?
What's this year looking like then? Here's your last.
You know what? I gotta tell you.
Couple.
I'm a Matt Moore fan.
Okay. Well, Matt Moore's your starter last year. He's your starter this year. Before that, though, you had Chad Henne, Chad Pennington, Tyler Thigpen. Oh, remember Tyler Thigpen?
Oh,
you'd rather.
Okay. Stop it. Because Thigpen was a gamer.
Yeah.
Thigpen, when he played Chicago, he played you guys. I think he had. Okay. Jake Long went out. He had no line. The rushers were getting to him by the time he got the snap. And then people judge him on that game.
Yeah.
Come on. He didn't stand a chance. But I thought Tyler Thigpen was actually a pretty good quarterback. That was one of those guys who just made stuff happen, and the team played better for him.
Tyler Thigpen's good in like a third string kind of way, or is like you'd let him start for your football team?
If it was him or Henny, I'd let him start.
Oh, well, him or Henny, yeah. Chad Pennington for a year, a full year.
Pennington was great, and I thought he was, he's such a smart quarterback.
Yeah. I remember you had Joey Herring.
Who?
Joey Herring.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay.
Herrington was the worst. That was at the point where Dolphins fans were, like, going nuts. Because they went through like 2-3 bad quarterbacks after Marino, and then thought, all right, maybe Joey's going to come in, and maybe he had a bad time in Detroit. He's going to turn it around here, and he was awful. Just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Just terrible. So
He was bad.
Good. Why are the Dolphins going to be good this year?
Why are the Dolphins going to be good? I think their defense is going to be great. I think you're going to be surprised. I think new coach.
Okay.
I think that's going to help a lot. I think Sparano was sort of a nuts and bolts kind of guy, and he prided himself on being an offensive line guru, and the offensive line sucked.
Yeah.
Year after year, just bad.
Yeah.
And I think this year, I think they're going to run the West Coast offense. I think they're going to spread it out a little bit more. And I think you're going to be surprised. I think the Dolphins are going to surprise some people.
Now, why is it, though, with Matt Moore being, like, the guy, I think? Why do you think they want to start David Garrard? Because I'm hearing things that they may start Garrard.
I think it would be a huge move. You know why? Because Matt Moore doesn't practice well, apparently. He doesn't practice well. But he's a gamer. He makes things happen. And I don't know. I'm a Matt Moore fan. I think what he did last year is he stepped into a shitstorm,
yep.
and he did pretty damn well with what he had to work with, and he was pretty hamstrung by the plays that were being called. And I don't know. I'm a Matt Moore fan. I'm a Matt Moore believer. You know, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. And he might not be. I don't know if he's. You know, is he Tom Brady? I don't think so.
No.
But Tom, there's not too many of them.
No.
And we unfortunately have to play in a division with those guys.
Yeah.
Miami
surprises New England sometimes.
Say what?
Miami's usually a tough game for New England.
Yeah, it is. It is. And you know what? I loved. Fuck, why am I blanking? Come on, Hall of Fame defensive end. He just retired.
Oh, just retired. Well, Junior didn't just retire. He just died.
No, you know what? I love Jr. And that was weird. I still don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I think it's a concussion to the head. That's what I think. I really do.
Well, I think also that there's, you know, you get athletes and they've been treated special their entire life, pretty much. And suddenly you don't get to play anymore. And you're still, you don't know what to do with your life.
Yeah.
And I don't think the NFL prepares these guys for that at all. And it's just, it's not only, I mean, what's the percentage of guys who have substance abuse problems, their marriage goes sideways? Because they marry these women who are like, I'm married to the quarterback, I'm married to an NFL player. And first of all, he's never around because he's on the road all the time. And then suddenly he's retired, he's there, they find he's not that guy anymore, he's struggling with that, and she's going, well, who the hell is this guy that I'm married to? And it's got to be a brutal transition.
Oh, I got to tell you, Lyndon, 78% of the NFL players are bankrupt. 78% of retired NFL players are bankrupt.
Well, why don't they have, and I'm sure the league has somebody who goes and talks to these guys, but maybe they don't listen.
Yeah.
But it would seem to me that if you had people going, look, here's the deal. Your lifespan in this league is 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
Maybe. And if you get to play longer than that, you're blessed. But once you quit, you're going to have a huge identity crisis because you're going to be adrift. It's like, you know, look, I remember, you know, going to parties and everybody wants to talk to you.
Yep.
Everyone wants, you know, to be your best friend. And 2 years later, going to those same parties, and people still talk to you. And it's not like they're rude. It's like you don't exist. And they're looking around for the next person to talk to.
Yeah. Well,
it's more dehumanizing than even if they were just rude to you.
And then the other thing I remember when it comes to the NFL is there's bad investments they're making because they put the wrong people in charge of their money. Child support, which is huge in the NFL. And, you know, when you get to be really rich, there's the generosity factor where you're like, oh, I'll give this guy money. I'll give that guy money. I'll give this guy money. And then pretty soon you don't have any for yourself. So,
well, what you got to realize is, okay, look, you get a big contract. Let's say a big contract, $3 million a year, right? That's a good contract.
Yeah.
You play for 5 years, and you're making that kind of money for 5 years. So you've made $15 million. You bring home, let's say, $8 million. You're living crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't know how to stop living like that.
Yeah.
And also, your sense of identity is caught up in being a success. So you think, well, shit, I'm a success on the field. I can be a success at these other businesses when you don't have any experience in it.
Yeah.
And most of these guys, if you were smart, and even if, you know, you came out of that deal and you lived large for those 5 years and you invested and you rolled out with, let's say, $4 million in the bank, and you know you got 5% on your money. So you're making $200,000 a year from now to eternity. You should be able to live.
Sure.
But they don't know how, because who was it? Charles Barkley said the most important word that any athlete can learn is no.
No. Yep. I remember that.
And,
perfect.
I told my accountant a long time ago, I said, you should have a sign above your desk for the actors and directors and writers who come in, and it should say, it's easy to make money when it's easy. Because when it is easy, you look, when you're on a show, everyone, you know, you get movie offers, you get offers to do this, you get offers to do that, you get endorsement deals, you get everything. And as soon as that dries up and no one, you know, then you're busting your ass to, you know, get a guest spot, and you're going to make, you know, $40,000, $30,000, you know, whatever that year.
Yeah.
And, you know, and suddenly you're going, what the hell? How did this happen? You expect it to be this gradual up and down thing in a career. And instead it goes up sharply and then you fall off a cliff. And if you're lucky, and I've been really lucky, then you kind of come and you get another, and hopefully you learn that what's real and what's not real. Don't ever believe the bullshit. Don't believe your own press. Don't stick with the people that you know that are your friends. Be grounded and know that this is a finite thing and you're lucky to play the game.
Yes, I agree with you. I gotta wrap up. We got another guest coming in. But before I go, is there anything you'd like to say about Teen Wolf? You want to give it a plug for when we can watch it? And
Monday nights, 10 o'clock, and then throughout the week on MTV. And I think that, you know, if you think it's just a teeny bopper show, watch it, give it a chance.
Well, I've seen it's more adults.
It's actually a really good television show.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I've actually seen it, and I do, and I actually have enjoyed it. I don't follow it week to week because I don't have the time, but it's a good show. It's not bad at all. So,
and you're going to be surprised with the Dolphins this year.
I'm telling you, I was going to say, Lyndon, I hope you come on during the football season.
Oh, man, have me back, and then we can talk more.
Let's talk about
wait 5 games, 6 games into the season, and we'll see where we're at.
That's what I'm saying, because I have a feeling 5 weeks into the season, Chad Ochocinco's released. That's my... But, hey, they got Jake Long over there. They got Vontae Davis, who I like. They got you got some players.
Oh, we got some good players. You know, there's talent there. There's a lot of talent on that team.
Yep.
And I think it's just the guy's got to be playing for the right reason. And I think that I think it's going to come together. I really do. I think Philbin is going to be a great change for this team.
We will see.
Yeah.
I wish you the best, though. You're in the division. I'm at.
And if not, there's always next year.
Hey, you know what? I'd rather see the Dolphins win than the Patriots and the Giants than anybody else in that division.
And the Jets, the hated Jets.
Up the Jets. That's it. Words we don't speak around here. I'd rather see the Dolphins win any day of the week over those guys.
Well, I appreciate that.
New York friends would probably disagree, but yes.
Yeah. And you know what? I can always root for Chicago teams.
There you go.
Always. And I got to give a shout out. I don't know if you're on the air locally in Chicago, but my buddy that I boxed with in college, Jim O'Connor, lives in Chicago. And if he's listening, hey, Jim.
Boxer, too. We got more we need to talk
about
next
talk
time you're on.
We need to talk more.
Right on.
Good man.
Thank you.
You're a good man. We'll
all
talk.
Right. Take care, you guys.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, good night.
All right. Well, now we got to call Larry Schwimmer. I'm like 15 minutes over on talking to Larry Schwimmer because he's getting into the Dolphins.
I know. He's a nice guy.
Look, people know I'm a sports guy.
He's
so
a great guy.
I can go on and on and on about, you know, the NFL for
boxer
days.
In Chicago, huh?
I know. Oh. Louis Lombardi's sitting at home right now licking his lips going, ah, Mandy, more football talk. Here we go. The season's starting, pal. And we're going to do a show, and we're going to get together, and we're going to do it right.
Oh, man.
So Larry Schwimmer, I'm going to fill everyone in. He is a author. And he's going to speak to us about astrology, which I know nothing about. And I am going to try to get my listeners to learn as much about astrology in the next 30 minutes as possible. So I'm going to call Larry, and we're going to talk about this. You think you did?
I think I did.
Hello, Larry Schwimmer.
Mr. Schwimmer, this is Matthew Aaron. I apologize for being a little late here.
No problem. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear you too. We had another guest on before you, and I was going on and on about football season. So I apologize. I did want. Okay, first of all, Larry Schwimmer, you are an internationally known astrologer, but you're also a business consultant. So we have a ton of questions for you. We want to see what your opinions are on things. But you're a Chicago, Illinois guy or no?
Absolutely. I was born and raised in Chicago. I'm a recovering Chicago Cubs fan. And I visit the Windy City usually at least once a year. I have a couple of brothers that live there still.
Well, now we got to talk about another loser team. First, the Dolphins.
Hey, listen, I have written Theo Epstein several times offering to actually do the astrology charts of some of the players they're thinking of drafting or doing free agent signings. Because I've done a lot of work in that area, and it's amazing to see some of these guys signed at the wrong time. They get sick, they get hurt, and they're not able to play ball and live up to their contract.
So you're like the Bill James of astrology. You could change baseball and give us the futures of some of these guys. Explain to me how this works. I don't understand how astrology works. Give me a little beginner's course here real quick and how this could help me with my life.
Absolutely. The key thing is that your birth chart is kind of a map of your future events that will take place in your life. So just imagine this. The moon affects the tides. Any police department will tell you there's more crazies out on a full moon. ER rooms will tell you that there are more people coming in for everything from gunshot wounds to all kinds of emergency problems. So we know that at least one planet, without any kind of question, affects and influences us. So in astrology is based on a system that says the 10 planets all exert influences in our life. So what I do as an astrologer, and this is what I would do whether it's telling Theo Epstein who he should draft or who he should sign or who he should go after in any time that he wants to evaluate a player, is I look at the birth chart of the individual. I look at yours, for example, and I would look at the planets that are there when you were born, because they were just laid out there in a certain array at the time of your birth. Here's the key point. Every year those planets, 30, 40, 50 years later, they're moving, and they actually make key points to the planets as they were when you were born. We call those in astrology transits. I call them astro events to stay away from a lot of the astrology speak that people, you know, don't understand, don't follow. So I can look at your chart and I can see the actual astro events that are going on. And as a client, I can literally sit down with you and say, look, if you're single and would like to meet a great person for partnership, here is the month that you ought to be out socializing on Rush Street, meeting women.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I'm intrigued by that.
We need help on this show.
Well, I'm here for you. I'm here for you, Matthew. If you said to me that you wanted to invest and make money, I could literally look at particular astro events in your chart for the year and tell you a great time for you to invest your money or the times that you should really avoid investing money. In 2008, I was able to make a lot of money by being short the stock market because I could see that the planets in the skies were in very negative cycles that would cause a banking crisis, that would cause a financial short crisis, and the stock market went down. And those clients that came to me and said, look, what should I do with my portfolio? I was able to give them that counsel. So whether it's somebody that says, help me find a partner for a great relationship, or whether it's somebody that says, I'd like to make a great investment, or I have many people who are in the middle of job changes or trying to find a better career, I'll sit down with them and take a look at what transits might be going on in their life that would help them have a great job change.
So let me ask you this. Right off the bat. I want to get into your past and some of the things you've done to get to where you are. How do you respond? Of course, there's people that are very skeptical of astrology. There was a whole documentary about it, the Penn & Teller bullshit show. All right, what is your response to people that think that astrology is just made up?
Well, you know, it's tough to respond to a lot of skeptics because, you know, basically I think the best way for anybody to ever evaluate astrology is to actually go see an astrologer, sit down, and have them be able to look at your chart, make some forecasts and predictions of what could go on. And then after you go through that process and see whether it was correct or not over 3 months, 6 months, or a year, you have your own answer. And that's what I did when I was maybe 27 and I saw my first astrologer in Chicago, Illinois. And basically I was there as a big skeptic. I had an old girlfriend that had bought me that as a present, a reading with an astrologer. I thought it was the hokiest, craziest thing in the world to do, but I went along with it. And it changed my life, really, because I was a pretty straight business marketing executive with Nabisco at the time. And, of course, I had to, put a cloak over me so no one would see me going into this woman's home for a reading. I was that straight. And I was just totally blown away, Matthew, by the things that she said to me that ended up basically occurring over the next 6 months, year of my life. So,
what did she say to you? What happened for you where you're like, no shit, this happened?
Well, first of all, she said this, sat me down and went through my chart and, of course, totally amazed me by the things that she said about my personality and who I was. She went on to say basically that my life would be changing. I think I saw her at the age of about, 29. And, everybody goes through this life cycle when they're about between the ages of 29 and 30 and a half. We call it the Saturn return in astrology. It's a time of maturity. And, let me ask you a question. In your life, people go through major changes, and I'll tell you what they are, and you tell me if you went through them. When you're between the ages of, let's say, 29 and 30 and a half, you get serious about your life. It brings maturity. So therefore, most people, when you say, well, what happened during those ages? They'll usually tell you they got married, they got divorced, they moved, they changed jobs, they found a new career, that kind of thing. I mean, what happened for you when you were that age?
Well, I haven't hit it yet. 29 up in August, Larry.
And I'm 27 and up.
Okay. Well, your chart would be interesting because I would be able to tell you personally, if I did your chart, where you would likely experience that particular Saturn return. For me, when I sat down with this woman, she said to me, look, you're gonna buy some real estate. At the time, I didn't have any money to do that. And she said to me that I would be leaving my job. And I said, well, I really don't have the money to do that. She said, well, the money will be provided for you. And that made no sense. And then she said to me, what will I be doing exactly? Because I basically went to school at Northern Illinois University, which is, as you know, the Harvard of the Midwest, and I got a marketing degree, and I was a business person. So she said to me, well, you're going to be teaching, and you're going to be speaking in front of people, and you're going to be writing books. I said, well, that's ridiculous because I've never spoken before a group, really, other than a department. I've never written any books, and it made no sense at all. Within 1 year, Matthew, the following changes occurred for me in my life. I left Nabisco, and I had been offered actually a special severance. They were going through kind of a downsizing kind of thing, and there was politics involved. And my boss, who I got along with very well, said to me, look, Larry, you can stay around if you want, but you're not going to be promoted. I'll tell you what, we'll catch you a deal. We'll give you 6 months of severance, full use of the company telephone credit card, and unlimited use of the travel budget if you need to fly around for anywhere in the country. I said, deal. I will do it. So there you go. The money was provided for me. Then the next thing that happened was I thought, I'd like to maybe become a therapist and learn more about psychology and learn more about how people function. And so, as it turns out, I ended up taking courses at the University of Illinois toward a master's in social work, and I got the idea of putting together a one-day workshop. And I literally went around the country conducting seminars on how to resolve conflict. And this is where I wrote two books that HarperCollins published. So it's just amazing how one thing led to the other, and pretty soon I had 25,000 people attend my workshops and seminars.
Another good.
So that was my experience with an astrologer.
So that changed your life. That changed your life, basically.
It changed my life, and I still continued on in the business world, but I started seriously studying astrology and taking courses in Chicago, and then taking actually classes from individual astrologers who, you know, were really quite excellent and could give me more of a mentorship type of assistance instead of just, you know, a class with 50 people or something. And that morphed into doing more work reading charts. And when I moved to San Francisco some years back, I continued on with my studies and became much more proficient and started doing readings for people. And all the while, I stayed with Smith Barney and some of the M&A firms. And basically, during the day, I was a guy doing deals, selling small businesses. And at night, I was studying astrology and doing readings for people.
So because of astrology, how much credit would you get your particular astrology event to the way you made money?
Well, I would say that it made a big difference in terms of judgment. First of all, I was able to advise people on some deals that worked out very well on that level. On the level of personal investments, I was able to make a good deal of money through different investments when the market was going to be up, as well as when the market was going to be down. But, you know, it's funny. One of the things that this astrologer said to me when I was in my late 20s, she said, "Larry, you're going to be lucky in the long term, but not in the short run." And just to show you what a wise ass I was at the age of 29, I said, "Well, wait a second. You're telling me that I would be lucky in the long term, but in the short run, I would lose. How about if I invested with somebody like Matthew, who was a lucky guy in the short run, by your own admission?" She said, "All I know, Larry, is somehow they'll get theirs, but you won't get yours." And, you know, that turned out to be true. I won't waste your time in this conversation, but I've had many situations where I've given people advice they made money on, but because it was a short-run deal, it somehow didn't work out as well for me. But in general, it's worked out well, and the advice I give people certainly has brought me income enough notoriety so that it's been a profitable career.
So how are you able to give advice to, for instance, people in show business? Because as you know, of course, you know, jobs come and go in show business. They could be for any amount of money. They could be for no amount of money. And everything changes so quickly in show business. And I'm assuming that, you know, especially because your publicist, who I know very well, the Friedmans are fantastic. I'm assuming you've done some readings for celebrities. So
I've had a chance to do that, and here's some of the advice I've been able to give some of them, for example, on movies or on TV deals. When I look at a chart of, let's say, somebody who's a celebrity and maybe they're not working and they like to work, I can pick out the one, two, three, maybe five times in the year when they should be auditioning, when they should be accepting scripts, when they should be making contacts, networking, schmoozing, doing all the things that you do. I can also tell them the times when they should not be accepting a role, or they should not be accepting some sort of opportunity that will only not work out well and might even take them away from a great opportunity that will come to their maybe a month later or 2 months later. So that's how I would advise them.
Okay, so then how do we do this, Larry? Do I have to come see you for you to read my report?
No, in fact, I probably about 80% of the readings I do for people are done via the phone. And anybody who would like to learn more about what I do and maybe be a client, all they have to do is go to my website, which is www.astrodecision.com. That's astrodecision.com. And you'll see clearly how I work, testimonials from people who I've done readings for that have written and let people know and with their names and you know, where they're from. So it's not JL from Wisconsin. It's actual individuals. And that's how they would learn. And in fact, there's a little bit of a four-minute video that where I talk about picking the best dates to do something.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, Larry. You also wrote a couple best-selling books for HarperCollins, that one of the biggest publishers in the book industry. How to Ask for a Raise Without Getting Fired and Winning Your Next Promotion in 1 year or less. And I know you did book tours for that, everything. Now, how much do those two books differ from the astrology stuff that you do, or do you include the astrology stuff in your advice books?
I do not include the astrology at all in those books. Those are business self-help books, and the connection really between them and astrology is really more the behavioral side of astrology. Because a lot of people, most people, including myself, are interested in the events. But yet the truth is that most of the time the events that occur in your life are connected to your emotional state, your psychological state. I'll give you a quick example. I had a friend of mine who was totally against therapy and thought that, you know, only weird people did things like that. And I looked at his chart, this is a couple of years ago, and I said to him, you know, you're going to be going through a major job change. And he said, well, that doesn't make sense. I've been working for this company for 20 years, and, you know, I'm pretty happy there, and I think they're happy with me. And it turns out within 6 months, he was asked to leave. He was actually fired. And the result of that firing was that he literally went through about 18 months of depression and ended up seeing a therapist. But my point is the connection between the event, which is you're fired, and the fact that he needed to really deal with, you know, the emotional issues that come when you lose your job and you're fired, kind of met together. So in the same way, the book, How to Ask for a Raise Without Getting Fired, it basically deals with a lot of the psychology that goes into taking risks and managing conflict. And a lot of that is also in astrology.
Yeah, what
in fact...
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to just say to you that one of the things that is unique in the astrology that I practice that's different from a lot of astrologers, and in fact, I don't know anybody that does this, is I include an astro action plan in any of the advice I give you. So if you and I had gotten together for a reading, you called me up and said, Larry, do my chart, and you know, I'm really interested in making a decision on you know, when's a good time for me to meet a great woman for a relationship, or when would be a great time for me to start looking for some special career opportunities. In addition to saying, hey, Matthew, you need to be out socializing between July 14th and August 6th because you could meet the future Mrs. Matthew, I would also sit there with you and say, look, what is the attack plan we're going to have for those 14 days? Because you can't be at home ordering a pizza. In fact, let me tell you a quick story that is exactly that scenario. There was a woman here, a client of mine, actually in Mexico, and she goes to school in Houston, Texas. She's in her maybe 23, 24 at graduate school. And she said to me that I'm really lonely, I haven't met anybody, and I'd like to meet somebody, but I'm really shy. So I happened to look at her chart and see that she had a fabulous astro event tied to romance and finding a great partner. And I said to her, it's going to be occurring for you between literally July 12th. This is last year, by the way. July 12th and probably July 22nd. She said, that's great, but you know, I'm kind of shy. So, okay, here's your astro plan. You must commit to calling up your girlfriends and being out at least three quarters of those nights at clubs, at parties, social events, wherever, but you got to be out there in the public. And she did do that to get the support. You know, a lot of people would sit at home and order a Domino's pizza and just say, hey, I feel good and whatever. So she did do that, and the result was what I'm telling you, you can see on the website, because she actually wrote as a testimonial, Matthew, what I'm going to tell you. She said to me, you told me I would meet somebody between July 12th and the 22nd. I met somebody on the 16th, and here was the story. I didn't want to go out that night. My friends made me do it because I told them to please push me. We went to, some sort of club, and the music was playing, and some dorky guy got up and asked me to dance. I figured, oh, gee, that's what Larry Schwimmer had in mind. I'm in trouble here. She dances with the guy, and all of a sudden, some other guy cuts in and asks her to dance. And it's almost one of these love at first sight things. And she writes me and tells me, I met the guy within 3 days of when you said I would, and he's now my boyfriend. And this, what I'm telling you, occurred probably about, 8 months ago, 8, 9 months ago. And I just literally got an email from her 10 days ago telling me that they're now engaged. So that was an example of somebody using the positives of an astral event that would say you are going to meet somebody for a great romantic relationship, but also using kind of an astral action plan to be doing something to help the influences that are positive that are there.
Wow. Okay.
So it really works, but people need to do things, and you know how it is. You can't hit a home run unless you step up to the plate and take a swing.
Yeah, that's why I was going to ask you. What do you tell people who, because you've written a book about this, or you give seminars about this. What do you tell people about risk taking? Like, opinion on? Is it different for every situation, obviously, but what do you tell people when it comes to risk-taking?
Well, first of all, both the books, I talk about basic communication tools that you need to use to be able to feel the confidence to assert yourself and to go for what you want. But the secret of risk-taking begins with physically taking small risks that you think you can handle, and you build up to even greater risks. And in the How to Ask for a Raise book, I focus on basically 6 techniques that people use to basically communicate better, deal with aggressive people, deal with people that when their personality is non-assertive. But the whole risk-taking really comes down to small risks graduated to larger risks. And by the way, that's part of the secret, I think, to why astrology ties in well. Believe me, I've seen a lot of people that walked out of a room from a reading that held their chests up high, Matthew, and were really feeling great about the idea that, hey, you're telling me I got 4 aces in my hand here. I'm going to go out there and win that particular card hand. I think it's no different if I told you that if you spent your time socializing, you would meet a great person for a partnership. It would fill you with a certain confidence, and that's what works for people.
So let me ask you this. How do you do? Do you do your own readings?
Well,
I
prepare the readings for individuals based on their birth data.
No, but I mean, do you do your own readings, Larry? Like,
yeah, I do my own readings, although I have one astrologer that was an old teacher of mine, and I love, you know, having her take a look at my chart, and we confer together. You know, I feel like we're two doctors sitting in a room looking at the same x-ray and analyzing it. In fact, you get a kick out of this. The Friedmans, who are really wonderful people, you know them, they're my public relations firm. I didn't start with them. I called them up, and probably it was a conversation of saying, excuse me, I'd love to use you, but I need to wait probably 45 days before we can begin. And they were nice enough to say, okay, what's the reason why? Well, I wanted to choose an astrological event that would be very, very positive, and here look at this. I'm hitting the big time. I'm on the Matthew Aaron Show.
I appreciate it. No, stop. I wanted to know, Larry, is, okay, tell me how factual this number is, if it's gone up, whatever. I was blown away by this. As a mergers and acquisitions expert, you have worked with nearly 5,000 business owners, and you've been involved in the sale of 125 companies. Is that true?
Yeah, that is totally true. I spent about almost 25 years working for companies like Division of Smith, Barney, and H&R Block. And what I would do is was really a fabulous job opportunity. I hit the lottery with this career opportunity. I would literally go to seminars that entrepreneurs would come to. And, you know, one guy would have a chain of 5 restaurants. Another business owner would have a welding supply company. Another business owner would have a software company. These would be small deals, companies valued at $5, $10, $20, $50 million, deals that were too small for Wall Street but yet too large for a local business broker. And the merger and acquisitions divisions I work with, they were interested in these small deals. So literally, I would run into hundreds and hundreds of business owners each year that I would literally talk with and meet with. So over 25 years, it was easy to get to 5,000. And during that time, probably there was something like 200-300 companies that were really excellent companies that looked like they could be marketed and saleable over a 12-18-month period. And of those, we managed to sell about 125 of them.
Wow.
And that's how that worked out to be the case.
How did you decide on all your investments, though? How do you decide on what you're investing in and what you don't invest in or whatever? Like, what do you use? Astrology? Do you use business logic? What do you mean?
Well, I pay attention to certainly the markets from a fundamental standpoint in terms of listening to, you know, CNBC, Bloomberg, reading articles, that kind of thing, Jim Cramer. But the most important thing I pay attention to are astrological cycles that are going on. So, for example, one of the things I'm telling clients whose portfolios I manage, they need to be out of the stock market. And you know, this is a prediction I'd like to give you for your listeners. We're going through a special astrological cycle. It's called the Uranus-Pluto cycle. And again, I try to minimize the amount of astro speak because most people don't care about the planets. They care about what they mean. So we have a special planetary event that literally started around June 24th. And it's happened 4 times in our history. It happened between 1761, when we had a depression, 1843, we had a depression, and then the third time was between 1927 and 1934. Again, we had the Great Depression, as you know. And now, the same cycle is in existence between now and 2015. So this cycle is likely to bring a crash with it. So I would tell people investing, and this is how I handle my own portfolio, that they really need to be out of the stock market between now and February of 2013. And the time to get back in the stock market will be after we see this crash. And I think it's likely to happen, by the way, before the election, sometime between, let's say, July 13th in February 2013, but likely by November 1st of this year. So I pay attention to that. I follow gold and silver in terms of how the precious metals market looks to be moving. I follow oil because there are certain planets that influence oil, inflation, and those kinds of factors. So that's how I'm looking at it.
Larry, I do want to announce we're going into overtime, which you can download on iTunes. This is going to be – Larry, you're going to stick around with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Great, great. You can download us on iTunes. I'm going to ask Larry a few more questions, and Larry's telling us right now, when's the right time to invest in the stock market, silver, gold, what he's thinking, because there seems to be a crash on its way. Go ahead, Larry.
I think if you're in for the long term, then maybe you don't care up and down movements, but anybody that lived through the tremendous crash we had in 2008, knows that, trillions of dollars of virtual wealth disappeared within just a few months. So most people lost their 401ks, they lost their homes, et cetera. So, I think it's better to make sure to protect your capital and the money that you have as part of your estate. So my counsel to people, if they want to be conservative, be out of the stock market now. Once we've had some sort of significant correction, and you will know it when you see it, and I'm guessing that you'll experience it by the end of August, at the latest. If someone says to me, well, give me a time frame that I can really pin your discussion to so I can give you credit if you're right and call you bad names if you're wrong. I would say probably somewhere between literally right now and the end of August. That time frame. So that's what I would do. As far as gold and silver, they're going up and down. One day it's up $45 like it was on Friday, and today it was down $6. The market is too unstable, and I would look to get back into gold and silver probably sometime after the summer, around in August.
Now, what about, Larry, what about private investing? What if you're investing into a project or a company, or you're starting a new project? Are these things you need to know all the details of, or are you able to tell by the way the planets are aligned and everything going on whether you should be investing money at all right now?
Well, there are two answers. To the individual that says, look, I'm thinking starting a business, the best thing that I can do for that person is to look at their chart and say, look, is this a positive time for you to start a business? Because, as you know, even in good times or bad times, people are always making money. That's why I'm not too concerned with the client that says, well, look, I'm thinking of buying a home. Is this a bad time? Well, it may be a bad time for, Larry and Matthew and a few other people, but it could be a good time for you, depending on your individual chart. So when people come to me and say, I'm thinking of starting a business, is that a good idea for me? And if so, when would be a good time? I base that on the astral events that are happening in their chart, in their life. And in terms of companies, if a company, like I've got some companies that are clients, if they want to launch a new product, I do an actual chart analysis of the date that they're thinking of launching it to see whether that product is likely to be successful. So you can do it on the level of either a company, you can even do it on the level of a nation, and you can certainly do it on the level of an individual.
As a investor, as a pro at investing, what do you tell people who want to invest into the entertainment business? Is there a flat out... do you look at every situation separately as an individual situation? Because as we hear so often in the entertainment business, it's the biggest risk you can take, but there's big rewards.
Well, that's true. And again, this is another very interesting part of how astrology works. If I looked at your chart, I might see that you would be especially lucky investing in precious metals or in food commodity products, or maybe if I look at Steven Spielberg's chart, I might find that he might have several planets that speak to investing in the media, in the movie place marketplace. So that's how I would handle deciding and being able to counsel somebody on what would be lucky for them. We each have areas that we're lucky in, and each have areas that we should stay away from investing. I mean, that's why people will say to you, well, real estate's great, but it's not my thing. Or someone will say, I hate the stock market, but I love real estate. So that is what I look at as an astrologer, to give people counsel on what kind of investment they should use their money for.
Do you know who's going to win president of the United States?
Yeah, I believe I do. I believe that Barack Obama will win. I've looked at the astrology chart of Mitt Romney and Obama, and while there could be some changes going on, Matthew, with whoever the vice presidential candidates are and political events, that could alter a forecast, but on my website in January, I came right out immediately and said, based on looking at Obama's chart, that he would be reelected. Although I will tell you that we're going to see a very strange phenomenon that you're going to remember, because it happened in 2000 with the Bush and Gore election. We're going to have a very unusual election based on the planet Mercury. Mercury goes retrograde 3 to 4 times a year. And when it does, just like the moon has strange effects where the ER rooms are filled with patients and people with accidents and, you know, the police are worried about all the crimes that are committed during a full moon, that's a different effect occurs when Mercury happens to, as we say, go retrograde. And the effects are that there are delays, misunderstandings, confusion, anomalies, a good example of that is the Bush-Gore election of 2000, which you know and I know ended with the hanging chads that were going on in Florida, if you recall, and right. Not knowing who the president.
Yeah.
Remember?
No, I do remember. Yeah, that was the. That was
yeah,
the
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, and so that same Mercury retrograde will be also happening once again in 2012, November 6th. So what I predict is that. That Obama will win, but there will be some anomaly that will occur then. For example, we won't know who the actual president is on the day after the election. There could be some big voting irregularities that will be occurring that will cause civil unrest. These are all the kinds of things that could make this an election that you'll never, ever forget. But I think ultimately... I do see Obama winning.
Well, my last question for you, and then if Alex has any, what are your thoughts on numerology?
I don't really know anything about it. I mean, I've never seen a body of work on it that has ever made a compelling case for me to. Adopt it. I've gone to a few numerologists, I guess, in my life. But, you know, the thing about astrology that always impressed me was, you know, Benjamin Franklin was a big believer in astrology. J.P. Morgan said that the great investor and billionaire said millionaires don't use astrologers, billionaires do. And, of course, Ronald Reagan used an astrologer. So I think it's well known that a lot of very, very powerful, influential people use astrology, even though they can't say a whole lot about it publicly.
Okay. Well, Alex, do you have any questions for Larry?
No, I was just wondering, how long have you...
into the microphone.
Long,
yeah.
Been,
there you go.
Doing the astrology in Chicago.
No, he's not in Chicago now. He's in California.
I know, but how long have you...
Oh, how long did he do it when he was in Chicago?
Yeah, how long?
No, I left Chicago in my 30s, so I probably was doing it there for 12 years and then moved to San Francisco, and now I live both in San Francisco and spend part of the time in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. So that's part of the reason why I have a lot of international clients from those who come from... all over the world to enjoy the sun and beaches here in Playa.
Great Chinese food in San Francisco.
There you go, exactly.
Do you have a good Chinese joint you like to go to out there?
They change all the time, but my favorite is Tommy Toys.
Okay, Tommy Toys. I'm going to have to check that out when I'm in San Fran. I love San Francisco.
And do me a favor, talk to Theo. I'd love to talk to him personally, and maybe he'll take your call.
Yeah. I don't know if Theo's going to take my call, but I'll call him anyways.
All right. Well, great having a chance to do an interview with you, and I'll hope to get a chance to do it again sometime soon.
I'd love for you to do it again sometime, and I may have to have you give me a reading. I may have to try this out. You're selling me.
Okay, sounds good. I'd love to do it. You got my number, or you can certainly go to the website and visit it and get me the information I need, and we'll go from there.
Oh, you're a good man, Larry. Thank you very much. Why don't you plug that website one time for me, Larry?
It's www.astrodecision.com.
Thank you very much. Larry Schwimmer, world-famous astrologist, and, of course, best-selling author. Thank you, Larry, so much.
You're welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
He was a good guy, huh, Larry?
Yeah, he seems like a really knowledgeable guy.
I liked Larry. There you go, astrology. It's one of those things where some people say bullshit and some people, like you said, I'm going to tell you this. This is what I know. I'm not saying I'm on one side of the fence or the other on this. But what I know is, I know there are certain high and powerful individuals, okay? And anyone that listens to our show knows, yes, my show's a little low rent, but I know a few people, okay? So, look, here's the deal. I know some very up-there individuals who use astrology and swear by it. And some of them will say 80%, 90%, 75%, or 100%. But those are pretty high numbers of percentages. Now, do I believe that's accurate or true? I don't know. I've never done it. Here's the other thing, though. I hate calling bullshit on things I don't know much about. And I just learned today about astrology, right? So I don't think I should call bullshit on it. I don't think it's appropriate. You got to know more about it. We just think it's like voodoo stuff,
well, I mean,
right?
I took a class in college on it.
Yeah, but you took like an actual astrology class, like the planets.
Well, it was like
stars.
It was like, yeah, astrology.
But they don't tell you how that affects like everyday life and people and stuff.
Numerology, and they just kind of just touched on it, and it's very interesting stuff.
Well, your dad's a big deal, Vito. He's a big deal. Okay, would your dad ever use astrology? I could see him at least
attempting.
Running through it.
He would try it.
It would be on the list.
It'd
be on the list. It'd be like, okay, I know what I kind of want to do, but I should check with Larry.
It'd be like Sox game, yacht.
No, but I mean on the list of when he makes a decision. He's like, all right, I know what I want to do. I know what Bill wants to do. I know what Bob wants to do. But I'll check with Larry real quick, just to round it out. We'll check with Larry.
He's a numbers guy, and if he could show numbers to my dad,
Sure.
He's like Rain Man when it comes to numbers.
Sure.
If he could show him the numbers, he will possibly look at it.
If he could show him numbers of when he said 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, don't invest in the stock market, now invest in the stock market, and show where the stock market came and went in that time period, that's proof.
And how many deals he's? I mean, it seems like he's done a lot of deals. What's his percentage on investment that he's made?
I would love
made
to
people throughout the
I'm
going to
tell you right now. I should have asked him this, but I don't like really asking these questions. But Larry Schwimmer's a very rich man.
Yeah,
he's a very rich man.
I didn't want to ask him.
Playa del Carmen and San Fran.
Mm-hmm. I didn't want to ask.
Not cheap places to live.
I didn't want
to
ask him on the radio, but I wanted to see what he charges. Say my dad's firm used him. What would he charge my dad as a consulting fee?
That's an interesting question, isn't it?
That's why I wanted to talk to him after the show.
Maybe it's on the website.
Probably not.
No. Oh well. Yes, it is $200.
I mean, $200. I've had worse investments.
He'll do
for $200.
He'll do a 60-minute teleconference with your dad. $200.
My dad would probably do it for $200.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's a nickel to your dad, so that's fine. All right. Well,
I'm going to do it, and I think everyone on our show should actually do it. I'll pay for it.
Well, let's not get crazy.
Mikey didn't show up.
No. Oh yeah, I should turn my phone back on.
Oh, he's probably outside.
That's awful.
Your sister wouldn't let him in.
What I was going to say is it was fun talking to Lyndon today, and it was fun talking to Larry. And I got to tell you, I was nervous at first about talking to Larry. I like when we have different people on this show other than just Hollywood types.
Yeah.
I actually kind of like it. It's kind of fun. I get to learn about a few things. And we did give out Julia's phone number today.
Yep.
That was
call her relentlessly.
That was excellent.
2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Looking for Matthew Aaron.
I'll delete it when I'm not being lazy. You know, here's the other thing. I know we're not going to have a million people listening to overtime, but Listen, people, when I tell you to like the Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook, that doesn't mean like the post that I say like the show. Click on the link and like the fucking link.
Well, you should write on
it. You don't like the post. You click on it. You go, oh, the Matthew Aaron Show. Click. And then it's going to say like, subscribe, blah, blah, blah. You go like.
Well, there should be an arrow pointing to the like saying like the fucking link.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get this girl to come out with us for a bit, and it's like pulling fucking teeth.
Yeah, we're going to go out for smoked Italian beef at Cigars and Stripes.
No, tonight's pulled pork.
Pulled pork?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, which, of course, Bruce Fretz made a joke about.
Again? Pulling Mikey's pork?
No, well, it might as well have been. Oh, Mikey did text me.
Oh, boy, he's pissed.
See you in 10 minutes. Now, this was like an hour ago.
Oh, man.
He did not see me in 10 minutes.
Now, is anyone upstairs?
Maybe that's what the barking just was.
Mikey's here.
All right. Well, we want to thank you guys very much for joining us today. Lyndon Ashby, of course, you can catch Teen Wolf Monday nights, 10, 9 central on MTV. Larry Schwimmer, you go to astrodecisions.com.
Smart guy.
And maybe he'll fill you in on where that next big investment's going. I am Matthew Aaron here with Alex Luisi, and we will see you guys next week when our guests are We Don't Know. So I will see you then. I'll tell you this. Pat's working on some big ones.
Hello.
Expect the small ones. All right. See you then.
Hello.
Hello.